Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss.
Hey everybody, this is Greg Soul with the Brothers Wiss, number 57. I hope you guys like that new intro that we eased into. We'll do a reaction video at the end. Mike wasn't as astounded as I was hoping he was, but still pretty good. I'll play it out in its entirety so you guys can hear it at the end. Mike Hammett, all the way from Chicagoland, how are you today, sir?
Not too bad.
Excellent.
Just fighting problems that never go away.
Gotcha. How was your Thanksgiving? Today is the, what is this, November 25th? So we're the day after Black Friday, Saturday.
It pretty good. I ate significantly on Thursday and then again on Friday.
Mm.
Today made lunch real easy. It's leftovers.
Nice. So, we were sort of early birds. We did, we really did Thanksgiving on Wednesday and then just ate leftovers on Thursday. So,
nice.
We didn't do family until Friday. So, family for us this year was we went and hung out with, my mother and father-in-law for a little while and then dumped the kids off and summarily ran back home. So, I've got a quiet weekend.
Here, take them.
yeah, please. Cool. So, let's see. We knocked the new intro out of the way. This is where I'm going to give the hard sell. Look, I'll look right into the camera, stare soulfully into my eyes and say, we have a Patreon now. We actually have like 5 or 6 patrons, which is pretty cool. We can buy a couple of cheeseburgers every month at this point, which every little bit helps. I'm not going to complain for reals. It's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. If you've never been on there, it's pretty cool. If you have, any producers. So I'm a patron of a couple of YouTube channels. So if you know, you like them, you want to support their work, you can throw them a couple of bucks every month. And that's what we're asking for. Just a couple bucks if we can. One of the incentives is a Slack channel. If you're an $8 member a month, you get access to the Slack channel. We've actually got a few people in there, and it's some pretty good stuff. Casey's pretty active, so it's cool. We need to get a few more Casey's in there so we can have some back and forth, some discourse.
Casey may be pretty active, but still doesn't hold a candle to me.
yeah, he's still Mike. Although Mike's been really busy lately, so as you could tell from the lack of interesting anecdotal information. I'm trying to think of a nice way of saying Mike's not complaining as much lately. He's too busy to complain.
That sums it up in terms of Wisp things. There's plenty of other things I complain about. not too many of them apply to this space a whole lot.
All right. So let's see, we're reeling back a little bit. We didn't have a traditional podcast the last week, so a little bit of news saved up from there into now. So let's see, what do we have at the top? We've got Unimus 1.4 releases. You guys should go and check that out. I'll have a little link to, I guess, the features that were released on there. Let's see. As far as hardware goes, we skip right into the Ubiquiti NanoStation AC passes FCC.
Sorry, I was distracted. I was trying to figure out if in the Slack analytics on the free version that we have, if I could see how many messages I had posted compared to everybody else.
Gasp! Stop trying to measure your penis, Mike, and then join the cast. Get your head in the game.
Most of it's, hey, it may work with this. Echo.
Yeah,
hey,
crickets.
Had this problem before. Echo.
Seriously, that's never happened to me, Mike. No, I don't know. You ask some random things. A lot of it's, hey, have you guys ever seen this product? Have you guys ever used this thing? And half the time I have to Google what it is. I don't even know what you're talking about. Or, for that matter, Andrew Thrift is bad about that, too. He's always talking about stuff. I have no clue what it is. But I had just mentioned that Ubiquiti NanoStation AC passes FCC. Yeah. You excited about that, Mike? I know you're not a big 5 gigahertz guy.
It's
with the ubiquity.
I don't know, because like they departed the nano stations to go towards the nano beams, which were the, you know, like the nano stations were the traditional, you know, they were 2-3 inches across by about, you know, maybe 8-10 inches tall, and
small rectangular CPEs, right?
Yeah, it's, and they were just fixed. They just pointed wherever you're mounted to is where it was pointing. And so, you know, there was an after, you know, there was a, you know, a few different third party options to provide some tilt, or directivity to it. So then when they came out with their new versions, the nano beams, it was like it was a ball socket and it would point wherever you wanted it to go. You know, up, down, side to side. And that was really flexible, but was an obvious departure from even the third-party add-ons, shielding kits, so on, which I don't use much of the smaller units, so I don't know how too bad they are on, you know, leaking RF anywhere. So I don't really know why they... I haven't even looked at it. I just posted the link.
Well, you said it passes FCC doesn't necessarily mean they've put it on the store or anything yet, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm assuming it's going to be a cheaper street price, right? Don't you think that's the play?
Oh, and I'm looking here, of course, because it's a fresh certification. There are no pictures. So I was hoping to see what its form factor was. I just assume that it's going back to the original form factor if they're using the same name. I don't know why they went back like that. I imagine they probably talked about it in the forums, but I don't really hang out there.
Neither do I. Well, while we're on the AC train, Microtik submits an AC cap to the FCC as well, right? So CAP's going to be there. Looks like a smoke detector-ish. Supposed to be used with CAPSMAN, right? For sort of a controller-based access point. And they finally did AC, like, just now. Not that it's even been announced yet, but as you can see, they're submitting to the FCC, so it's something in the works.
Yeah, The caps are so far into the Microtik series of things that I've never looked at. I know that Tom deployed a whole bunch of them, and I think they're ending up where Tom has put everything else Microtik. I believe the Andrews have been have spoken decently of them, not praising them, but not quite the Tom reaction.
Yeah, in most of my deployments, I can't really use much 2.4, so I haven't really used the traditional cap at all. I've been waiting for something AC, and it's. How long ago do you think it was the Ubiquiti Unify stuff was in AC?
I mean, they've been in AC for years.
Yeah.
I mean, years to the point where they've already, like, end of life the earliest AC ones, and they're 2 or 3 generations later.
Yeah, so this is just a really late submission to the game for controller-based access point, you know, that's supposed to be, I'm assuming it'll be a decent price, hopefully. But yeah, for high density environments, not necessarily super high density, but I guess an environment where you'd want something controller based like that. And I guess if the price is right, I'll probably give them a try, put a few out.
Yeah, I'm checking their website now to see if they have anything up there. No, they just have the HAP ACs and the WAP ACs, no CAP AC. Standard CAP's like $50, which is cheaper than any of the ubiquity solutions, but then again, they've kind of moved on from that. I think Ubiquity's cheapest AC is, it's still under $100. I'm not sure how far under $100, but it's like their pro version that I think is at the top of the, well, it was at the top of the pecking order at the time. They've since added HD and something else and something else. Anyway, it was at the you know, top of their product line, and it was only like $150, $180. Some of their oldest, you know, older top of the lines, you know, be it the original AC or the dual band N, they were $200, $300, $400. The Unify AC Lite is $90.
Nice. Yeah, I've used some of the what is it, the WAP ACs, the Mikrotik WAP ACs. Those are pretty decent. I mean, they handle a decent amount of clients and seem to have good signal.
You know, I just look at like the management systems they have for it, and it's like, what it doesn't do anything for me. So I, you know, I've got a bunch of Unify, which I think probably has among the best, you know, user-facing admin controls. I've got some CN Pilot stuff out there too. That's the Cambium, you know, office Wi-Fi stuff, and it. I like that they have a lot more configuration than the Ubiquity stuff. At least since I last, you know, delved through it. But their configuration through their like central management panel is just awful. They have like, there is no central, like there is no GUI or any user interface really for changing the configurations on the Cambium ones. It's just dump in the config you want it to be. You know, relevant sections, and we'll push it out. There's no like, it's just a text box. Type in what you want it to do.
Interesting.
I know we're kind of off topic there, but yeah, but the Mikrotik ones have just never, they've never had the visual element for me.
Yeah. The polish isn't there, like the user interface. I'm sure I could channel my internal Tom if I wanted to, and complain about that. But yeah, it's just, I think it's not there for the average user. It's not a system certainly that you would put in place and then turn over to an end user and say, here you go, this is easy to manage. Whereas the Unify, once you get it up and running, they can easily log in the interface and kind of check status, check who's connected where, and movement. So, I mean, right, so it's a very user-friendly system as far as that goes. You know, something kind of along this line is I started working on a project with a buddy of mine who's a talented programmer, and it's not Thomas, not that friend of mine, but he's a programmer. He does a lot of stuff in automation and monitoring and things like that. And we've been looking at doing and I'm curious to see what people think, if people would be interested to jump in on this. It's kind of a hosted platform. So the idea being, and see what you think about this, Mike, would you be down for this? You take a inexpensive Mikrotik, probably like an AC Lite, something like that, and you drop a quick config on it, throw it at a customer site, and then they can log into kind of a hosted portal to easily change their SSID, add SSIDs for their kids, do like time-based stuff, you know, so turn their kids in and off at 8 o'clock and back on at, you know, 8 in the morning, whatever it happens to be, maybe do some basic filtering. But also in the online interface, if the customer's having problems, there's a button they can click and it's like test. And so it'll automatically do like a bandwidth test for that customer. It'll do some trace routes to specific resources, things like that, and it'll save it into their account so they can look at it over time. And then you as the operator would have access to go in there and look at all that information as well. But for me, I'm thinking on the operator side, there's extra tools that you have, like intrusive tests. You can operate, I mean, you could do the exact same test they would do, but you can also do like an intrusive test where it will put in a firewall rule, it'll block them from doing anything and do a true bandwidth test, do a lot more system resource testing. And maybe even you can say, watch this client. And so it'll just automatically every X number of minutes fire off one of those tests, you know. Maybe even do some information aggregation, like, you know, because it could be constantly pulling all the CPEs, checking out information, you know, constantly pinging them and stuff. And then, you know, if multiple customers start having issues simultaneously, you know, it can do notifications based on, you know, hey, it looks like everybody off of this one tower is having problems, or all of a sudden we've seen a spike in people testing from this area. Maybe there's something awry there. You know, just the idea being you put a hosted device out there, you have access to jump into that thing. You can VPN in and test through their equipment just like them, you know, that sort of thing. And the idea is to do all of that plus more, right? Get community feedback, add additional things. But do it for like, I don't know, 50 cents per device, maybe $1 a device a month. I think that's more affordable. I've heard of competitors doing stuff similar to that without that much functionality and doing like $5 a month or something like that. Do you think people would be interested at that level?
The whole, you know, Wi-Fi as a service, router as a service type thing has really been entering into the, you know, the WISP industry. You know, it's like the cable and DSL companies have been doing that sort of thing in name only, you know, by just saying, here, you know, pay me $10 a month and you get the equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, by the way, you have no choice. You take the equipment, it's $10 more. You know, I'm just trying to jack up your bill. And, you know, they don't do, you know, but they don't really give you any, you know, value add. You know, there's no services they offer to help, you know, evaluate, you know, bad situations. I know there's a ton of people doing a ton of different things. There's a ton of different ways of, you know, skinning the cat right now. But, you know, very few platforms have the amount of built-in tools that Microtech does. And so that, you know, some platforms let you compile your own Linux things, and, you know, obviously at that point you can put whatever tool in there you want, that, you know, there's capacity for, but mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's a lot of work. I'm not doing that. You know, if you can, you know, if the user can, you know, have a little portal where they're, you know, keeping track of stuff, you know, maybe, you know, maybe there's a button that, you know, opens up a, you know, API call to your, you know, your backend system that, you know, opens a ticket, says, hey, you know, this customer's having a problem, you know, doesn't have to call you or anything. It just opens the ticket from that portal. You know, that'd be handy.
Say it also does bulk administration. So if you've got 100 customers with these Microticks, you can say, all right, push updates to everybody, you know, go to this router OS version, or change this on everybody's config. You know what I mean? It's basically bulk administration of that as well, right? So if you're in there and you've got access to all that, you might as well add some extra capabilities in.
Sure.
I thought it would be interesting. Would you be willing to pay 50 cents a month or $1 for something like that?
That's, you know, that's low enough price where if it, you know, if it helps my customer in any way, I'll probably just do it. Like, you know, that's where, you know, like that's where, like, the, you know, pre-seam service is somewhere in that price range. And from what I recall, you know, of course, the pricing information's old. You know, the other services that would do something similar to affect, you know, quality of experience were all, like, way more expensive. And it was, like, you know, not worth my time to, you know, for that dollar amount. But, you know, 50 cents a buck, you know, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking if you're charging $10 a month and say it does cost a dollar, you're making $9 a month. A half AC is going to be like $40, I think, an AC light or something. ROI is pretty fast. And then, you know, I mean, was that like, I don't know, 5 months and you get your ROI. And then after that, it's just profit for the next several years. Plus, just the benefit it's going to be able to give you with all of that extra insight. You know, I was thinking about some of the new technologies like the LTE stuff, like buy sells. You know, whenever you put those guys into bridge, there's not really a lot of tools you have on the CPE. Really, you're kind of flying blind. All you can really check is just, you know, just statistics off of the radio. So what could you do in those scenarios to really save your ass, save truck rolls, and help quell customer complaints? You know, is this actually a legitimate complaint from the customer, or is it just user error? You know what I mean? You can squash all of that if you've got an actual piece of equipment out there that you can connect to. So, I mean, that peace of mind, you could even make the customer one time pay for the piece of gear, you know, if you wanted to charge them $50, and then just roll in the 50 cents or buck or whatever into the fee for that customer. I was just thinking, because that's the piece I hate, right? Is loss of control somewhere in that plane. You know what I mean? So, if I've actually got a piece of gear, and I do this in a lot of my different networks. And so I was thinking, why should kind of a WISP environment be any different, right? If I can actually put that piece of gear out there and have full control of it, and any testing scenario I can devise can be automated by the system, or just consolidated down, condensed down to just a single click, you know, to be able to kick off stuff. So I don't even have to really think about it. That would be pretty cool. Or maybe even if a series of actions are detected, it would automatically kick off some testing. And then, you know, maybe give the user the ability to submit ticket, you know, and it just sends an email that your ticket system's going to pick and go from there. I don't know.
Sure.
A lot of different options.
Yeah, you know, that's something I've noticed with a lot of those LTE platforms, that there's a significant lack of features or end user abilities or management that WISPs are used to. And I think it's a struggle they have between, you know, the LTE world, you know, doesn't really have comparables for a lot of that stuff. You know, they're trying to maintain as much LTE compatibility as they can. So, you know, some of these things get dropped on the floor. And I mean, you know, I guess I would rather have, you know, Telrad, Bicels, whomever, you know, working on the platform, and I just slap a, you know, PAP AC on the customer side to make up for my lack of something to test to, my lack of triple PoE, my lack of, you know, whatever it is that it does. You know, I'd rather they spent their time, you know, building the platform. And if they have some spare time to make the CPE better, then great. But I can work around that. I can't work around a platform that is too slow or crashes or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like Bicels is doing the right thing. They're focusing on the product and making it work, right? Everything else, the niceties are kind of coming along as they come along. So I can't really fault them there. I mean, I don't know. It seems just more complicated than your standard pulling, you know, an Atheros chipset off of a manufacturer's site and then building a little radio around it. You know, kind of the same normal thing everybody else is doing. So there's a few players in the space. They're trying to be as cost effective as possible, and I think they're able to do that by focusing on just making the technology work, and some of the features that we've grown accustomed to or would really enjoy just aren't there yet. So if this could be a stopgap and an affordable one, I honestly want to build this for an existing project I have. Now I was thinking, if the programmer I'm working with can make a few bones, it'll encourage him to expand the system, keep building it and making it better. open it up for other people. So I was just curious if you people out there listening have any thoughts on it. Be sure to shoot me an email, greg@gregsoul.com. I would love to hear it. Let's see. You posted up Wispa has dropped a few new videos on YouTube that they actually recorded at the 2017 Wispapalooza. And some of it was like how to start a Wisp, I think, right? And that was kind of a two-part. So just more of the introductory stuff, right?
Yeah, it's, I think Wisp is trying to find a middle ground between, their traditional stance of, we don't record anything because we want you to come to the show, and everybody else saying, we want some videos. I've done it as well, but, I see people all the time that are, when someone's asking a real newbie question, the response is automatically, go to Whisper Show, You learn so much. And they do. There's, some of the things they're posting, ABCs and, what kind of, regulatory paperwork there are, you need to be involved with, some stuff like that. It's stuff that you should probably have a basic understanding of before you go to the show. So then you can maybe be a little more precise in what you're looking for. So I think these videos really help. And, just looking at some of the video or viewer counts, the, most popular video they have so far is the, ABCs of Starting a Wisp, part one. Part two kind of falls off. But, I think I spent the last week sharing them. I'm trying to make use of Facebook's scheduled post feature a little more versus just dumping, 11 links all at once, kind of spread it out a little bit. I'm glad, I didn't make any one of these shows. Or any one of these sessions. I mean, granted, I don't need the APCs or, intro to dynamic routing, but, I've never gone to a traction entrepreneurial operating system thing because there's always something that meant more to me happening at those times. But seeing the people that feel so strongly about traction, they're some of the more successful operators, regardless of size, they've done a lot with their business, since they started doing this traction thing. So I'm like, someday I'll check that out. I never make the State of Wispa. That's like one of the early morning things. And I really tried this year. I really tried not to stay up too late and, get back and watch some of these things. But, I think I was in the exhibitor hall, beating vendors when they were doing that. So I watched that, and there's some stuff in there I need to follow up with, something else I wanted to share. It's kind of rambling. I suppose probably find something else. But I assume they're going to have some more content up there. I think they're going to put some of our videos up there that, we did for them. So
very cool. All right, so let's see. Moving on, you had Wispa CBRS. Tell me about that.
It actually hasn't hit the federal, the FCC back in October. They announced that they were going to change some of the rules in the CBRS band that we can't yet use, but should be ready early next year, to be a lot more cell company friendly. And that's not what they called it, but that's clearly what, CBRS, there's like 75,000 census tracts that you could get a license in 3550 to 3700 megahertz. And they did that intentionally because all their other, area licenses before have been, entire markets. So if you want to do anything in the Chicago area, you had to buy a license that covered 10 million people, which is obviously going to go to somebody that has a lot more money than you do, regardless of who you are. And these cell guys figured out that, hey, we might be able to bid competitively on some census tracts. And, since we're only buying a couple dozen or a couple hundred, we can pay more per census tract. So they said, hey, FCC, can we have these narrowed down to just partial economic areas, which is only, I think, like 400 or 500 of those in the country? So that's a significant, that's, two orders of magnitude different in the number of things. So obviously, we can't afford it as much. But anyway, so how the FCC works is that when they have a meeting and they vote on something, it doesn't actually, shot clocks or whatnot don't actually start until it's published in the Federal Register, which is like the official government, here's what has happened. It's been almost a month, and I don't think it's been published yet. So they're still tinkering with things in the background. But WISPs in the U.S. need to speak up and speak loudly on that CBRS matter. That's actually probably more important to us than, net neutrality.
Is there an official method for people to do that? I mean, is there a petition? Do they write their local congressman? I mean, what do they do?
But, WISPA has circulated some information. I think I've shared it a couple times. So I'll share again. But, officially, when the FCC opens up, that proceeding, there will be, some official, document to file on at the FCC. WISPA and others, Rick Harnish has been real great about making pictures, showing different situations, where the cell guys aren't going to bring 5G to, which is what they say that, need this for. I'll publish more posts for sure as far as, what to do and what, both customer facing and government facing.
So stay tuned is what you're saying?
Stay tuned. I've been posting a lot of stuff, like, those pictures. I'll post a lot more.
Okay. So I had a couple of community questions that were out there. These are more just kind of open discussion questions to see what you think. One guy says, and I'm sorry I can't credit you because I forgot who you were. He says, hey guys, I'm looking for recommendations for good data center ISPs. There are some of the ones that will be available to us. Talia, RCN, Light Tower, Cogent, HE, NextGen, FiberTech, and all the big boys. We're already using HE in one of our data centers and are pretty happy with them. What are your faves? So who are your favorites, Mike?
Well, looking at that list, I can tell that he's in the New York area because NextGen is in his data center. I think Light Tower bought FiberTech, and then Crown Castle bought Light Tower. Anyway, a shameless plug. I always try to join an internet exchange. I only have two. There's hundreds of them in the world. So, yeah. I'm obviously doing everybody else a lot more of a favor than myself. But, because really, if you're in the New York area joining any of those there, you're going to get a good three quarters of your, as an eyeball ISP, a good three quarters of your traffic's going to go to those guys. And you'll be one hop away, and it'll be cheaper. So really, that's what you should do. Really look towards that. Anything else is just kind of tertiary because so little of your traffic will go there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people, depending on what market they're in, they may not have a kind of, you know, a true internet exchange in their data center, right? Maybe they're in a smaller regional data center, so they'd actually have to get transport off to get that. So, I mean, theoretically, it could be cost prohibitive, right? So say you're at this, I would agree with Mike, though. I would say step one is hit an internet exchange if you can, because it's going to be pennies on the dollar compared to buying traditional DIA from a carrier. But yeah, elevated experience for your customer too, right? So you save money, elevated experience for your customer. Their ping times get better. You know, why wouldn't you do that sort of thing? A lot of the gaming companies like Blizzard or whatever hits those exchanges too, right? So theoretically gaming traffic gets better, you know, it's better all the way around. On that list, I see Talia. I love Talia. I've been a Talia customer for the last, I think, 3 years. They are my favorite carrier of all of them. One is they have great connectivity. I mean, the U.S. is greenfield for them, right? They're European, but their U.S. reach is really good, and their customer service just kicks ass. You call in, you've actually got an engineer on the phone. If you say, hey, I'm seeing some oddities in this market and they are having problems, they will tell you. They'll say, yep, we had 2 10-gig links to these guys. We lost one. Now the last one's congested. It's like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, they don't try and obfuscate anything. They will tell you exactly what's going on. And they're just, I don't know. It's very refreshing, and you can get to them really quickly.
Yeah. And so, Greg, how did you find out about those guys?
You pointed me towards the Renesas. Was it Renesas Bake Off? Yeah, I think they got bought by Dyn, but you pointed me towards those guys because I was in Equinix Dallas. You said, look at this list, you know, and Talia was up at the top, and I checked and they were on the list as being there, and I just reached out to them. So yes, Mike, you found Talia for me.
That's nice to hear, but it wasn't so much, you know, I was trying to lead towards that Baker's Dozen list, you know, regardless of how you got there. And, you know, I'll note that the Baker's Dozen list isn't much a list of quality as, you know, this, and there's no units on the graph, but it's just showing you, you know, comparatively how much IP space purchases transit from a particular company.
Mm-hmm. Because if you look at that list, level 3 is always at the top, and you know, I would put level 3 right up there with AT&T on shitty service. So I wouldn't buy DIA from them unless I absolutely had to. Right? So you're right. It's definitely not necessarily a good indication of what your customer service experience is going to be like.
Regardless of the carrier, you know, I always say, you know, the best way to get to X carrier's customers is to buy a service from that carrier. Because then it's all, you know, it's all their problem then. But this kind of helps you out with that. You know, Cogent is one of the ISPs that has, you know, typically has, you know, a high number of ASNs under them. I think they've been battling level 3 on and off for a while. I was like, you know, best way to get to Cogent customers through Cogent.
And Cogent, I think Cogent has a reputation for being second class citizens. So, you know, just, you wouldn't necessarily, you know, maybe at the end of the night, she's the last girl at the bar kind of thing. I'm not saying that's not unwarranted. They are some of the cheapest DIA you can get from anybody. I mean, they'll almost pay you to take their internet from them. And they're really good on their options, bursting. Like on a 10 gig, you can do a 1 gig commit. Sometimes they'll let you even do it in less than that. And sometimes they'll even do 90th percentile, not even 95th percentile. So they just have a lot of good options. Their pricing's really good. You can beat the hell out of them and get a pretty decent price out of those guys. Obviously, I can't put a number out there, but
yeah, they You know, and actually, you know, I think a lot of their reputation is not so much how they are now, but their baggage from years gone past. I'd say they don't cause some of their own problems now, you know, such as IPv6 pairing with Hurricane Electric, IPv6 pairing with Google. Short story is they don't. You can't get to Google or Hurricane V6 from Cogent. It just doesn't happen.
Well, I think also Cogent has a habit of oversubscribing a little bit more so than most carriers, I think. And so it's funny. I know a lot of people that use Cogent as backup links, right? So if my main carriers have problems, the only problem is everybody's doing the exact same thing. So if you're in a market where there's a major fiber cut and you're kicking, everybody's kicking over to Cogent, you're probably going to have a bad time. You know, I'm just going to put that out there. You know? In my Cogent links, I really engineer most of my traffic away, and I just let route optimizers throw some stuff over there. So they'll move a decent little chunk. But those route optimizers are very tuned and very sensitive. So if Cogent has any kind of problems, it'll rip that stuff right back off.
Sure. Yeah. I get some sort of promos I've been hearing of lately. Nothing official that I've seen, but I've heard that if you not only quote in hand, but if you purchase a Hurricane Electric connection, Cogent will sell you a connection of the same capacity in the same data center for half the price.
Wow, that's crazy.
Because Cogent used to be the low price leader until Hurricane, you know, 4 or 5 years ago really started, you know, turning things up.
I've been hearing good things about Hurricane Electric. I know a guy out on the East Coast in the Virginia area who says it's one of his favorite carriers right now.
With the current public or the current advertised pricing I've seen of Hurricane, you know, I've seen them advertise anywhere between, you know, $1,500 and, you know, $2,000 per 10 gig. And you look at Cogent will sell you one for half of that. You know, you can buy 20 gigs for, you know, $2,100, $2,200.
That's a no-brainer.
That's not a bad deal. But again, it can be kind of, all carriers are going to be market dependent too. You know, every carrier has some markets. They just charge for the shit. And for a reason, they don't fix it. Or they do, but it just somebody else becomes, you know, the new problem child.
But, you know, so I'm thinking here, if you're, say I'm a WISP and I'm looking to get some decent DIA, right? I've always bought from the local incumbent, but I'm looking to do something different, right? I need to put on my big boy pants. It's time for me to do something real. How am I going to find the best sources for DIA in my area, or maybe I need to go a little bit further, right? I mean, I am a wireless ISP. I can transport that stuff. You know, I can shoot it through the magical airwaves. Because at the Bryan Data Center, sometimes I run into folks that don't even know we exist, right? So how do people find that? I mean, how would you, if you were in that situation where, hey, I need to get internet in this area, how are you going to find your best DIA prices, Mike? What do you do?
Well, most people aren't going to be able to do what I do. I've built my own GIS system of probably about 120 layers of network information from different companies. So that's how I do it. That could be challenging for everybody else. So I guess just ask us, and I can just look. I'll look at my database and tell you who's there.
I think another way you could do is you can find a circuit reseller, like one of those wholesalers that has agreements with virtually every provider. They're going to have some of those decent maps right there. And then what you do is say, here's a pinpoint. give me everything you've got in a 20-mile radius, you know, or maybe something akin to that. And then a lot of those times they'll just want to give you a quote, but you can also say, just tell me who the providers are, if you wouldn't mind, and what pops they're in. And if even if they won't give you the pops, if they give you the providers, you can then contact those ISPs and say, you know, your transport providers, whoever they happen to be, and say, you know, where is your pop? A pop being a point of presence, right? Where they actually have active gear that they can hand you a connection off of. Sometimes they're going to be in unexpected places. Sometimes a carrier pop might just be a regen point, right? So there's nobody else in there. You want to look for, in my opinion, you want to look for a pop where you've got more than one provider going in there. And if possible, more than one set of fiber going in, right? That way you're not single-legged, a little bit of extra redundancy, a little bit of resiliency on your carrier side. Ultimately, you don't want a single point of failure, right? If you've got, if you do find a data center, well, they've got three carriers and they're great. You know, you've got some options, but if they're all riding in on the same strand of fiber and a backhoe cuts it, I mean, you're dead in the water. So all that carrier diversity did you no good. And if you want to know what that fiber path looks like, ask your carriers. They will tell you. And often they will give you kind of a Google Earth map showing you this is the route it takes. So you can ensure that, you know, it actually is taking diversity.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, I picked up a new, you know, consulting type client. It's a local, you know, ISP. You know, not really competitor to me. I mean, because we a little bit different in markets, even though we're in the same kind of geography. But you know, they're, you know, transitioning from, you know, who managed their network before, also provided them with their internet service, also did, you know. They did soup to nuts, and they're going somewhere else. And before they talked to me, they had already ordered a circuit from somebody with no regard as to how it got there. Just, we need to have a connection. You know, and then they tasked me with, okay, now you need to get a diverse connection. It's like, well, you mean, well, they told me a connection. I put on the diverse stipulation because it doesn't do any good if both of them are in the same conduit. So, you know, I've been, you know, working on their reseller that, you know, sold them the service saying, hey, you know, I need to know the physical path of that, you know, both carrier and physical path for the circuit that you sell, you know, sold these guys for the sole purpose of knowing what not to buy.
Yeah.
You know, if I buy it, you know, if you use carrier B to get your transport in there, you know, I still can't use carrier B even on a diverse path because it probably lands in the same, you know, chassis. So if the chassis loses power, I'm screwed either way because it's, you know, it's not in a real data center. It's in a CO. So there's not a whole lot of, you know, ins and outs there. You know, there's a multitude of ways to find stuff. You know, look at telecomramblings.com. They've got a bunch of maps up there. I know because I've looked at all of them. All the U.S. ones, anyway.
I've got a much smaller version of what Mike has. Most of mine covers Texas. And what I did is in the areas I'm looking to get connectivity in, I figure out who has fiber in the ground. Contact those guys, develop a relationship. It doesn't usually take very long. And a lot of times you have to sign an NDA, but they'll hand you a KMZ that you can just throw right in your Google Earth, right? KMZ just being a Google Earth map file, I guess, that, you know, they can have all their fiber routes in there. And then you can just take on all the providers and figure out who's close and who's closest to what you're looking for, find the pops and go from there.
A couple other resources would be datacentermap.com. I think it's what it is. And then just look for data centers in that area and then look to see what connectivity they have. You know, even if you don't buy from that data center, which is probably easiest and cheapest to buy it from them, assuming you can reach them because there's no build-out cost or anything. It's there. But worst case, you can look at who is in their facility and then, you know that they're in your area somewhere. There's a whole bunch of other places like that. Cloudscene.com, Inflect, I think .com. There's a couple others that are, you know, built, you know, trying to combine other people's, you know, data libraries and, you know, who's where. And,
for sure. Another thing you can do is in certain areas, I found if there is a college in that town, get a hold of the head of their telecom department or somebody in their telecom department. They know all the players in that market because all those people naturally gravitate towards them and want their business. So they're going to be a good resource for you. Sometimes local municipalities, if you can get a hold of their IT director, those guys can tell you, right, especially if it's a county organization, they're usually going to know who's in and around because those folks have to pull permits to do that stuff.
They'll either be your best resource or your worst resource.
Don't hang all your hopes on them. But I think if it's a multi-pronged approach, you can hit, you know, kind of that guy, and the county guy. I mean, you might get lucky. Somebody in there is going to know something about that stuff. And they can point you in the right direction or point you to somebody who does probably have a good idea. It's usually the case.
I guess to directly answer his question, there is an implied question and then a question.
And all the big boys. So it says there's pretty much everybody.
I guess tangent off of that, you were saying earlier about, you know, buying something a little non-traditional. You know, don't be afraid to buy a blended server from a web hosting company. You know, I know the ones that you work for are a bit different in that they already have a bunch of their own eyeballs, so there's no advantage. But I've talked to several that, you know, they're all content. You know, they're just, you know, their pipes are full of stuff going out.
Yeah.
And they already have 4, 5, 6 carriers. And, you know, they're probably carriers that you can't afford, you know, at a 1 gig level or whatever. And, you know, they've got 10 gig pipes with all of them.
Yeah. And 90% of their traffic, you're right, is outbound for them. Whereas 90% of your traffic, on average in ISP, they're inbound. Is all right. So what they upload is about 10% of what they're downloading, right? And a hosting company is the exact opposite. So they've got so much capacity that they can't do anything with. They usually will give you that stuff dirt cheap.
Yeah, it's, you know, this has been a couple of years, so the price isn't nearly as good now as it was then. But I go back 3 or 4 years ago, and you know, I had companies saying, you know, we will sell you a, you know, 10 gig port, you know, with a, you know, minimum, I think 3-to-1 ratio, you know, download to upload, for like $1,000. And it was just a screaming good deal. I mean, you know, that's when 10 gig ports were $3,000 or $4,000. Mm-hmm. It's 'cause there's, you know, their interfaces are empty going the other direction. It's just free money for them other than the cost of the port.
Yeah. For me, sometimes, or at least traditionally in the past, I had fears of, you know, if I'm buying from somebody else and I'm kind of riding on their network, how do I trust their abilities to do the engineering great? You know what I mean? Because it's, you know, you're assuming that they're going to be able to keep all this stuff together and working. And web hosting companies, I'm sure they get hit with DDoSes a lot and stuff like that, right? So, you know, how do you sort of account for that? And I think today there's enough forward-looking systems out there that are potentially affordably priced where you can protect yourself, right? So I use one out of Europe is my forward-looking system, and it kicks rear. But I know Noxion is a U.S.-based one that when I looked at it, had most of the features I needed, but it was really expensive. But guess what? Now they actually have a free version that has limited options. But one of the options that it does have is route protection. So it's actually sampling upstream. And if it sees a failure, it'll fail that carrier and then move your traffic over to somebody else, right? So if you're buying really cheap bandwidth from maybe an unknown quantity, this is a way to kind of get away with that. And you know what? Maybe it doesn't cost you anything.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and, you know, I've worked with a couple ISPs now where, you know, I mean, I haven't gone the other way just because I have much more capacity than, you know, they do. But, where, you know, I'm talking to, you know, one of my neighboring ISPs, you know, where, you know, we're not really competitors. You know, he bought, his upstream mix, he's got, you know, carriers A and B, and I've got, you know, C, D, and E. You know, there's no carrier overlap. There's no geography overlap. And so, you know, we have a connection to each other. You know, you may prefer your routes, and if there's a problem, you know, you just, you know, go over his.
Yeah, keep him as a backup. I mean, it's solid.
That, you know, I talk, you know, I know lots of people are, now reacting, quite harshly to that. You know, I see it all the time, you know, on Facebook and email groups where guys are, you know, so-and-so, you know, Wisp, you know, that, you know, bleep bleep is, you know, building, you know, building towards my network, you know, trying to overbuild me, this and that. You know, I was driving over to here one day and I saw one of his towers. You know, he's 75 miles away and he's closing in. I'm like, wait a minute. Your nearest competitor is 75 miles away and you're up in arms about that? Like, I got 13. I have 13 WISP competitors. And I get along with most of them. I know
that's crazy because Mike doesn't get along with anyone.
No, just some vendors. And I'm trying to work on that. I know not everybody can actually do that, but that can be a very cost effective way of having some resiliency.
Right. But that's operating on the assumption that the neighboring carrier is doing BGP as well, right? So that your assets, your resources, you can advertise out of him. I guess if in an average ISP, you're probably not doing a lot of web hosting where like specific IP addresses need to be accessible. And I guess even in that instance, as long as for a temporary period while your upstream is down, if your users can continue to get to the internet, even if it's via some address space that's not, they're not normally accustomed to, something's better than nothing. So, I mean, I guess that makes sense too.
And, and as long as you have, or, they have a /24 or more, you know, the moment that you turn up that connection between the two of you, you know, now you're both multi-home, so you can get your own ASN from Aaron. And so now they can do BGP. You know, they may not have good hardware, but.
Right. And they may not be able to afford to purchase air and IP space. But
if they have a /24, even if it's from, you know, their upstream, you know, they can, you know, they could then qualify for getting their own ASN. You know, maybe not their own IP space. You know, IP space, you know, but the ASN's, you know, $500.
Yeah, and in some limited capacities, I allow people to advertise, you know, like a /24 out other carriers on their own, do stuff like that. So,
So I guess now going back to what he was actually asking about, if you've got Hurricane already in that data center, I would probably go to Cogent and say, "Hey, I heard I heard you're matching offers." That's probably the first place I would go.
Yeah. I would definitely say though, if you're in one data center and you connect to another data center, do not pull the same carriers in the two locations.
Yeah,
get diversity. Yeah. And as everybody keeps getting gobbled up, it's harder and harder, right? So, Time Warner got acquired by Level 3, and then a Level 3 just got acquired by CenturyLink. You know, and then CenturyLink had bought Quest, and I think Level 3 had also acquired Global Crossing, right? So it's, even if you have carrier diversity today, doesn't mean you're going to have it tomorrow. depending on who buys what. I mean, that's literally happened to me before. Yeah. At one location, I had Time Warner in level 3, and then they announced they were going to be acquiring. And I was like, well, great. Let me see if I can get out of these contracts in time to make some diversity action happen, right? Because you can't always afford to just willy-nilly bring in a third carrier, you know? It's not always... sometimes that stuff's cost prohibitive, and you just got to make it work. I know maybe in some of my networks, I'm a little bit more risk averse, right? I can't absorb outages, really, period, for most of them. But, you know, in a carrier network, sometimes, you know, just an eyeball network, sometimes you can get away with a little bit lower. But I would definitely say never buy the same carrier if you're connecting them to the same network. You know, and if you're looking for a diversity play, definitely use different carriers. Never use the same fiber providers, ever. Just try and use different paths and different carriers for sure.
Yeah.
I've seen it bite so many times.
Yeah, quick tangent on your TW Telecom statement. I was looking some stuff up the other day, trying to trace down some old maps for the cloud. You know, who built a lot out in the upper Midwest in the 2000s, well, in 2000 area, and came across a map. They had a bunch of networks on it as of 2000, and you know, some names on there I didn't recognize, or you know, I did recognize as someone who wasn't there anymore. So I was looking them up, and TW Telecom had just recently spun out from Time Warner Cable, and they picked up at least two of the, you know, national, you know, .com bus. There's GST Telecommunications, which no one's heard of, and Enron. They bought the Enron network. But just random useless information I acquire.
Yeah, and something else that popped in my head is, just because you're in a data center and you're buying connectivity from one carrier, it doesn't mean they're riding their own fiber in. You got to make sure of that. And then just because a carrier has fiber in the building doesn't mean that they're not riding you on somebody else's lease fiber when it goes south versus north. So you got to check on that too, because I've had that bite me before too. You know, carrier had diverse fiber in, but they had a 20-year IRU. What is that?
Indefeasible rights of use.
There you go. So it's basically an agreement that can't be revoked, right? So they've got this fiber. Anyway, they had a 20-year on it, so they were doing their transport piece over that. Even though they had redundant fiber in the building of their own, they weren't using it for the leg that I was riding. So I had some unexpected problems when there was a cut on a completely different provider's network. So definitely tell them to supply you with what the path is. They have no problems with that. They won't balk at it. It might take them an extra day or two, but I'm pretty sure you can wait a day or two. Just make sure that you have as much diversity in place as possible.
Sure. I'm actually looking at, I'm working with about a dozen WISPs in Missouri right now. And I say working with a dozen, you know, there's far few, you know, there's maybe only four or five that are, you know, actively participating. But, you know, I've made a Facebook group, to try to organize them into, one of them has a 10 gig port with AT&T and it's filling up, well, or full. And so they're looking at dark fiber. You know, Company A gave them a price on it, but, you know, they were hoping to get a competitive bid from somebody else, which is difficult in dark fiber, you know, find carriers that will sell it, and then two that will sell it in your area if you're not in a, you know, major metro. So I talked to this other company, and they said, well, you know, we're probably not going to want to, you know, sell them that short of a connection, you know, because that leaves the rest of the route, you know, unusable. And, you know, they didn't tell me how long, but they would, you know, they said, well, you know, we're going to want to probably sell most of this route. So I started looking along the way, looking for other wisps that might be able to go in. And so far, we've got somewhere probably around 300 to 350 miles, route miles that we're looking at. The bulk, the estimated price of dark fiber right now is about $22,000 a month. Don't have any solid numbers yet on that because they don't want to engage their engineers.
$22,000. That's 300 route miles. That you're going to have to do regen somewhere in there. Does that $22,000 include regen, or are they just giving you access to regen pops, or what?
That's just the glass. Their regen sites are available for $13.50 a month. And that includes a half rack and dual 30-amp power feeds. I'm like looking at my equipment, I'm like, it's going to use 50 watts. I don't need dual 30 amps. Can you cut that back, or can I tap into the light switch? But with there being that many wisps looking at it, there's actually not that many like long segments, because we're looking at what we probably do is actually just, where a wisp taps in, that's where we have, that repeater or that amplifier, because it, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to say, hey, wisp, we're just going to put this thing in your hut or, whatever. Yeah. Actually, because most of these wisps have towers that are surprisingly, really close to the fiber. One guy actually has 11 towers that are, within, 1,000 feet of the fiber.
I think you can usually go a couple hundred kilometers if you're using amps on both sides.
Yeah, so I was looking at fiber store stuff. Mm-hmm. They've got, they'll do some engineering for you, once you have exactly what you want, in terms of, which type of fibers, they know the loss and distances between nodes and things like that. But, but they do have some, random pre-built systems up there. And so their longest one is 200 kilometers. And looking at what we've got now, our longest section is, longest section without somebody committed or interested in a particular location is 157 kilometers. You add on 20% to that for, slack loops, places, and, maybe some bad splices, things like that. And, we're getting pretty close to that 200 kilometer mark. So, nice to find somebody there in the middle.
Yeah. Well, something else you can keep in mind is when you're talking about dark fiber, if you actually are having to put your own glass in the ground as well, sometimes you can go in with people like you're talking about. I've seen in examples where, again, the university is a great option. You've got a university in your town. Normally, they're going to have stuff all over the county, and a lot of times they want to light that stuff up. So, if you're putting 48 count in the ground, you give them a tube, you take a tube. You find somebody else, you can subsidize that stuff. Sometimes local municipalities, sometimes the county will help go in. Sometimes all three of those. I've even seen where these guys got a grant to drop some fiber in, and FiberLite talked to them about, hey, let's go in this together. Pull your money with mine, you get half the glass, we'll get half the glass. And so you don't always have to upfront all the costs. Sometimes you just got to do some fishing, find somebody else to help you.
Yeah, that's I just pulled up this little Google sheet that I was putting together for this project, and for this particular piece that we're looking at now, we're looking at 339 miles, and right now for optics cost, we're looking at just over $57,000, and that is stopping off at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 locations along the way.
That's not bad. Especially if each wisp is going to kind of cover the gear at their site, cost wise, that works out pretty well.
And then that platform can move, I don't have all the ad drops in to move that many wavelengths, but it can move 40 wavelengths of 10 gig. So that's, you know, 400 gig that you can move for, you know, and if you cut, you know, if we get 10, you know, 10 ISPs to go in on this, or, well, 10 organizations, I don't care who they are.
Right.
You know, now your cost for the fiber is only $2,000 a month. And your share of the wavelengths, assuming everything's even, is you get four. Where else are you going to get four 10 gig wavelengths for $2,000? I mean,
that's a pretty good deal.
Not many places. Yeah. So, and actually, I'm not even charging them for this. I'm just putting it together.
Are you going to manage this thing?
I am requiring nothing. I'll do whatever they ask me to do. But I'm just saying, here, yeah. I'm getting everybody together. I'm doing some of the engineering for you.
Yeah, stuff like that usually works, but you need a neutral third party to run it just to make sure it stays on the rails.
That all I have to do is just ask.
Yeah.
I don't want there to be some of that stigma of, well, you know, he's just trying to sell us stuff. No, I mean, you can do whatever you want with it. Conveniently, though, one of the ends is in a data center where I have an internet exchange. So I'm helping them get somewhere where they can buy my service.
Fair enough.
But if this goes forward, you know, then I can go somewhere else and do the same thing and say, okay, I did this for these guys. You know, now I'll do it for you guys, but I'm going to charge you now because, you know, I did it for them. It works. Reputation.
Fair enough. All right, Mikey, it looks like we're at the hour mark. You want to put a bow on this thing?
And here I was thinking when I first saw that list that we weren't going to be able to fill up more than 20 minutes of time.
Yeah, it happens. And we actually had more to go, too. It's those nice, it's whenever the guys give us questions, they're a little bit more open-ended, more thought-provoking. That's where we sort of run down on tangents.
Probably half the cast was just talking about that one guy's question.
And that's why people tune in, I think. They don't really care about anything else. All right, guys. So, Mike from Chicagoland, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
Just try. You'll probably find me. If your Google abilities are lacking, the Brothers West Facebook page, I will probably notice. I will footnote that I've been busy lately with the new consulting customer for the past couple weeks and probably for the next month or two. So I might not be quite as snappy, but everybody gets a level of service.
Gotcha. All right. So facebook.com/TheBrothersWisp. That is Mike. If you guys want to get a hold of him, that's a really good place to get a hold of him too. Most of the comments, most of the question answering, most everything on there is Mikey here. So big thanks to Mike. If you want to get a hold of me, you can find me at my blog, which I almost never update, but occasionally I throw something new in there, gregsoul.com. Shameless promotion. I like to Google myself and see that I'm number one. It is what it is. You can also contact me at greg@gregsoul.com in case you want to email me because you're old school. Let's see. What other mediums do we have? We have patreon.com/TheBrothersWiss. Give us your money. Anything can help. Any questions or comments?
There are 8 patrons now.
Eight patrons. And every one of your dollars is going towards new rap songs for our intros, so appreciate that. Now, I've actually found some Argentinian guys that don't speak any English, and I think I'm going to make them sing one. That'll be good. Any questions or comments? I definitely prefer kind of open-ended questions, like thought-provoking stuff, so fire them this way. I really appreciate it. We've got a couple more in there that we'll try and cover next time, but it really does. It's crazy. One question easily lasts us 30 minutes, and it's just the two of us knuckleheads here talking about it. So, again, thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
I actually got a new intro, so I thought, what better way than to introduce our podcast than with new theme music? So I went to this little website called Fiverr, and believe it or not, you can actually get people to make music for you. So I thought, as cheap as they are, $5 a pop, I can get a new intro theme for every single podcast we do. So here's the very first one. I wanted to play it out in its entirety and maybe tack it on to the end of the cast for funsies. So obviously I won't play the whole thing for the normal intro, but just kind of a little bit to ease in. See what you think.
The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space on this mothership. Wireless networking. We talk about equipment and methodology. So sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web and neighborhoods that's surfing.
We got, I guess, your computer's clever.
Loud and annoying, but we're informative facts. We're not disappointing.
Not as bad as just everyone give thinks us it a listen. Or is my keyboard really that loud?
I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you miss the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.
I don't think we'll be seeing him on MTV anytime soon. I guess we don't see any music videos at MTV anymore. But no, it's
it made me laugh pretty hard for five bucks. I think it's totes worth it.
$5, that's that's pretty good.
Yeah, it made me laugh really hard. So we'll see what the next one looks like.
It I would guess that you would have to you'd have to enjoy composing to do that for $5.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I gave him an extra $5. I made it an even $10. I thought it was pretty
nice.
Pretty worth $10. All right. So you ready to start the show?